Hope everyone was living for food this weekend. The second amazing cookbook author I have on deck for you, you may actually recognize from social media. With over 4.6 million followers on Instagram, Yumna Jawad has made her mark on the foodie community, known for creating healthy and whole dishes with a Mediterranean flair. We chatted about her childhood, favorite dish from the cookbook, and the most grueling process of creating a cookbook, which, by the way, is out today. Yes, today it's out. Because I've chatted about so many amazing cookbook launches from previous episodes to upcoming episodes, I created an Amazon storefront with a section called Podcast Guest Cookbooks, where you can just click and see all the guest cookbooks that I've spoken to. It's linked in my Instagram bio, so you can just head to that and click on it right there. You can also head to livinmedia.com, livinmedia.com, to check out my first recipe blog. Feel free to leave your thoughts, questions, concerns, but go easy on me because it is my first one. So, I mean, criticism is always welcome, right? So with all of that being said, please join me in welcoming the lovely Yumna Jawad.
1, 2.
Also, apologies for whatever is going on in my background. There's construction everywhere. So thank you so much for taking the time out. I know we're short on time, but I have been following your recipes for quite some time now, and I'm really excited to talk to you. You always are popping up on my page.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here as well.
Yay. So normally what I do is kind of start by reverting back a little bit, talking about when you were a kid. You were born in Sierra Leone, which is in West Africa. You're inspired by Lebanese cooking. Your recipes have a bit of a Mediterranean flair. So it seems like these types of dishes you've been creating seem to have been exposed early on in your life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, when I was born, where I was born, and I lived in Sierra Leone for 11 years, we basically didn't have a lot of the conveniences that we have nowadays in grocery stores. So everything my mom made was from scratch. So she would make her yogurt from scratch, tomato paste from scratch. I mean, and oh, wow. It was just, everything was such a labor of love. So we kind of got spoiled into just, and you know, so my mom was a housewife. And so this is what she did. And she cooked beautiful meals for us for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it was just such a beautiful way to eat and just like cherish our culture and enjoy home-cooked meals with so much flavor. But when we moved to the U.S., my mom discovered, hey, there's actually like Hamburger Helper, and we've got Rice-A-Roni, and there's all of these brands that can make your life so much easier. And I just remember being so excited about those things and diving into them, and then realizing very, very quickly like how unhealthy they were for our bodies and how much, you know, how you can actually take, you can make Rice-A-Roni in 20 minutes, or you can actually make something very similar using a couple shortcuts here and there that still delivers a lot of flavor. So I have taken kind of like, you know, the way I grew up eating and kind of transitioning to this and just trying to find like a median that's like comfortable for my family and my lifestyle now that still cherishes those like ethnic roots of eating like great Mediterranean flavors, but then with a lot of shortcuts. You know, we're not making our own yogurt. Like, we're using yogurt, right? Because there's amazing organic yogurt on the market that you can buy for $5 a tub. And, you know, those little shortcuts. And then just always making sure that my pantry is stocked with these like flavor enhancers, you know, whether it's like tahini or za'atar or, you know, Kalamata olives or feta cheese in my fridge. Those are the little things that just can elevate all of the meals.
Oh, for sure. So what age were you when you came to the States?
I was 11 years old.
Okay. Yeah. So you were very aware. So you were there in Africa for kind of a good amount of time then.
Yeah, I was. I was born in Zaire, actually. And then I lived in Sierra Leone. And so we moved here because there was a civil war that was happening. And so we came to the States as refugees. So, yeah.
Okay.
And so just like a culture shock too. I mean, we just lived in the smallest little town, and then we come here and I'm like, the grocery store was just like Disneyland, you know? It was exciting.
I do. One thing the United States has is a slew of choices that we can make as consumers.
So yeah, exactly. Sure. And now my brother lives abroad. And so when he comes to visit, he's like, I just want to go to the grocery store. Like, I just love the grocery store here.
I understand that. I that's the one thing I missed when I was in Europe, although I do love their ingredients and all of that. Yeah. But I always was like, oh, I wish I could just get something super quick. Mm-hmm. So did you find that you were kind of enjoying cooking when you were in your teens, or when did that kind of start for you?
So food is such a huge part of our culture. We are constantly having get-togethers and people over, and then anytime somebody comes over, it's like a 10-course meal, and we're just like very generous with like our tablescapes and how we have meals together. And so growing up, you know, I would see my mom like labor in the kitchen. Even when we moved to the States and she was doing a lot less, like I would still see her, you know, labor for hours to put beautiful meal together for our family or for when we have people over. And so she always tried to get me to help, and I never really enjoyed cooking. And so I was like, I don't want to learn how to cook. And to me, it just looked tedious and it looked boring. And I actually just enjoyed making things look pretty. So I would always be tasked with, like, you know, wrapping things or layering things or just presenting them on a table. And I was very hesitant, did not want to learn how to cook. I thought, I'm like, I don't need to learn. My mom's got beautiful meals and I don't need to learn. So it wasn't until I got married, I started having my own family, and I thought, I want to give to my kids what my mom gave us. And I'm not going to be, and you know, within a few months, I moved away from living a mile away from my mom. And so, I had to basically like force myself to learn. And I just knew that as soon as the reward of enjoying those home cooked meals was so worth the labor. And then I actually started loving it. I started enjoying it. And it was just so fulfilling, you know, to just take a recipe. And so my mom gave me a lot of the recipes that we grew up with, the Lebanese Mediterranean recipes, even some African recipes, actually. And then I started just digging in online too and learning about, like, how do I use quinoa and make it into a salad? And how do I, you know, make overnight oats and things like that. And so I got to be known as well as just like a healthy food blogger that uses feel good ingredients in general, with having my Mediterranean side as well.
Well, cooking is tedious, so I understand your point when you were younger, especially just like even today when I cook or cut vegetables, I'm like, oh, this so is taking tedious. So long. Like, it's definitely a labor of love. Oh, yeah. So I understand that. But I'm glad you brought that up, because I was wondering if when you have kids, you kind of wanted to pass these recipes down to them too. And now they're going to have like a physical way to actually see all of your recipes, which must feel incredible.
It does. It feels amazing. I tell you, I just got my cookbook. Like, I actually got an advanced copy of the book, and, you know, I sat with it and I hugged it and I loved on it and all the things. But then I showed it to my son and my daughter. And I remember my son literally opened it up and he was like, oh, I want that. Oh, I want that. Like, and he's just so excited about every single recipe. And it just like brings so much joy to him. And he's like, I want to make all these recipes one day too. And as an 11-year-old kid saying that one day he wants to cook all of mom's recipes, it's just like, it's come full circle for me of just like, why did the cookbook that I did, and, you know, just seeing how it's going to be used in my family for generations to come.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. Congratulations. And we'll get into that a little bit more in detail, but I want to get into the point where you started your Instagram in 2013. Do you find that your culture is like the strong relatability point for a lot of your followers, especially with that Mediterranean influence?
Yeah, I think when I started, I was trying to shy away from that a little bit. And I thought, like, nobody wants Lebanese recipes and nobody wants Mediterranean recipes. So I'm just going to sit here and share, you know, quinoa recipes and like cooked chicken recipes and things like that. And I found that every once in a while, when maybe it was Ramadan or it was like, you know, a special meal that I was having, and I would share like a baklava recipe, or I would share like how I made my Lebanese rice, people would ask me, there's so much interest, like, oh my gosh, I've had that before at a restaurant. And like, I know that rice with the little noodles inside of it is so good. How do you make it? And it wasn't, and I'd be like, it wasn't even the feature of my recipe. I was trying to show this. And so after seeing the enthusiasm from a lot of my followers for some of these recipes that maybe they grew up with, but they don't have measurements for how to make them, or there's not a lot of resources online available for how to make some of these recipes, I decided to start to slowly share more of them. And so now I feel like it separates me from a lot of other food bloggers, because it's, you know, something that I truly own and I truly like, you know, have a history of eating and have experience with it because of my family. So yeah, I do think that it separates me from others. I'm still seen as like a healthy food blogger, but with a Mediterranean twist.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I was thinking too how much I'm sure the childhood nostalgia comes with, you know, your recipes and the people that follow you, but also just the plain exposure to people who maybe don't know a lot about the food. And it's more of like a cultural kind of teaching moment too, especially mm-hmm. me. Like I'll go to a Peruvian restaurant. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is that? Like I need to recreate that or not even recreate it, but just like know what goes in it. And a lot of, because you're more at a healthier kind of food blogger point, you know, you want to tell them exactly what goes in it. Cause that's kind of the point.
I think what's really inspiring too, for a lot of people is that they can have these authentic flavors without a lot of ingredients or weird ingredients. Like I just shared a chicken shawarma recipe and literally it's just chicken and spices, garlic and lemon juice. And so, but you know, you have to get a couple spices like cardamom, for example, and putting cinnamon on chicken, which people are like, you put cinnamon on chicken? Like, how is that possible? But with the combination of everything together, it just works. It makes, and it just gives you this like authentic street food shawarma that you wouldn't be able to make otherwise. So, but once people realize that, oh, I just need a couple spices, lemon and garlic, I can make this, you know, super authentic recipe. It feels a lot more approachable. And it also allows them the opportunity to try something new and kind of get out of their comfort zone.
Right, right. Now that you're, you know, you said your mom was a big influence and she really loved like making everything homemade. Is she surprised by your career path?
She
was
totally
now?
Surprised. And now she calls me and she tries to ask me about recipes. She's like, do you remember how do you make that one recipe? Did you like, because she's just kind of like stopped, like, and she's never really measured things, but she's like, I was trying to make that one recipe and it didn't work out. Do you ever make it? And so, yeah, it's just so interesting to see. And she's very proud and she's very excited too. And a huge part of the book and everything that I've written about has so much to do with my mom and the way like she taught me about food and recipes and being healthy and honoring my culture and heritage.
So now let's get into your cookbook a little bit more, which is slated to come out on May 7th when this episode will actually come out.
Oh, perfect.
So what was your most favorite part about the process and then your least favorite?
So I, as a seasoned food blogger, I live on SEO, search engine optimization. It's everything that we do. Every time I want to write about something, I'm like, wait, how many people are searching for this term on Google? And if it's not like 5,000 minimum searches per month, I don't even bother with the recipe because by the time you develop it, photograph it, have a copywriter help with it, and you have a social media person share it, it's costing you so much money that you want to make sure there's a return on investment. When it came down to this cookbook, I didn't care how many people were searching for a recipe. And so if I was, for example, I made a mixed berry crumble, like a mixed berry crisp, and I put sumac in it. Sumac is like a very tart and peppery little spice. And I just put like a teaspoon or 2 teaspoons in the recipe, but it just gives this like lemony, peppery little zing in it. And no one, if somebody on Google was searching for the recipe and they saw sumac, they would be like, whoa, I don't know about this. I don't want to make it. But buying a Mediterranean cookbook, knowing that like there's this small ingredient that you can add to it that's just going to transform the flavor of this mixed berry crisp, because just like it was liberating for me, you know, not to have to think about like, well, no one's going to search for it or no one's going to want this or people are going to be turned off on Google if they find this recipe. It was just more like, let me take you on this journey of how to make these like simple everyday recipes, like a mixed berry crisp, but just adding a little something to it. And if you don't have that something, you can skip it, obviously, but let me just take you on this journey. And so that part for me was like super exciting. I love that part. And it just really allowed me to be so creative with all the recipes. And I can just think like, how do I make this better? And like, ooh, what if I like, you know, roasted a lemon inside with it and like squeezed the lemon on top of that fish, you know, instead of just adding fresh lemon, but roasted lemon. And so I really enjoyed that process so much. So I developed all 125 recipes. Tested all of them. I also had two other testers as well with me. And so sometimes when they would have feedback, it would come back to me. And And we would just kind of go back and forth on them. And my son, after seeing the cookbook this week, he's like, I think you should make all 125 of them again. He's like, I kind of miss them. I kind of miss those ones that, you know, that he's like, those chocolate chunk cookies. I think that you need to test them one more time.
or five more times.
Just in case. I'm like, it's already printed, you know? So that part I loved so much. I am just like, my zone of creativity and genius, I feel like, is in the kitchen, just having fun with ingredients. And I just enjoy it so much. I think the part that I didn't enjoy so much was like the editing process that comes with the book. It's just tedious. Mm-hmm. It's like, is it 3 cups chopped or is it 3 chopped cups? Like, you know, and it's just those little nuances of writing recipe that kind of takes the joy away from the book. But it's necessary. That is so true. And I am actually super detail oriented. And so I just was going through it with a fine tooth comb. And I think I must have read the manuscript easily like 27 times, if not more, and just over and over and over again. And it was enjoyable, but also very tedious and also stressful. The idea that somebody may one day find a mistake in this book stressed me out so much. And so that part, I didn't enjoy it as much. But I think that it's necessary to make a successful cookbook. And so I'm happy that I put in that time and did all those edits.
Yeah, yeah. You're talking to a girl that I'm pretty sure has like undiagnosed OCD with those things. I'm like, if someone finds a mistake in my book like 10 years later, I'll actually cry.
Right? Like,
but I'm sure you have so many people coming through.
I know. And that's the reassuring too. I have such a wonderful team of people too that helped me just like comb through it. And they were finding things that I wasn't finding. And it was great.
That's actually funny that you brought that up too, because I was reading in a past interview that you did on how you would advise aspiring influencers and, you know, other brand creators. And you just said, just start and not worry about every detail being perfect before launching. But is that the philosophy you tried to carry through when creating this book? Because I feel like it's so hard.
I think that when it comes to this, it was not that same philosophy, because I felt like being published, I felt like it needed to be perfect, because especially because I've been doing this for 10 and a half years. So I actually had a different mindset, because I felt like, you know, when this book comes out, people are expecting a certain caliber. Like if my first blog post goes out and the pictures are terrible and, you know, I have misspellings and I said 3 cups chopped, but it's really 3 chopped cups. there's opportunities to change and enhance and delete and do those things. And with this cookbook, I really wanted it to be a beautiful imprint of all the 10 and a half years that I've been in social media and doing what I do. And I wanted it to be just like a true symbol of like all the work that I've done, and as professional and, you know, tight as possible. So yeah, I didn't exactly have that. But what's interesting is when it came down to writing the proposal, I did kind of just allow myself to just be free and just say what was on my mind and just let it just start and just see where the ideas flowed. And my idea with this cookbook was 8 Mediterranean staples that can elevate your everyday dishes. And I thought, it's kind of weird. I don't know if anybody would really like that. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to start with that idea, see what people think, mm-hmm. and just see people grasp onto that idea. And so I shared it with an agent. She's like, I love it. I love it. I love it. You know, and then I tried to water down that message a little bit. And she's like, don't water it down. Like, stick to it. Like, if people are not going to buy this book because they don't have sumac, like, too bad. Like, they need sumac in their lives. It's a spice that costs $5. They need it. They can make this recipe, and don't let it, like, you know. And so it was kind of freeing too. And I think a lot of it is because my agent really just pushed me to be like, give it what you want to give it. Just start and give people what you think they need to have in their lives for this book.
Right. And I mean, people go to your page for a reason. They want to learn about those spices exactly. that are easily accessible to them, but maybe they didn't try, because honestly, I don't think I have that spice in my spice cabinet, you know?
And it's like Herbe de Provence, for example. It's like, do you really need Herbe de Provence, you know, when you're making tuna niçoise salad? And it's like, not really, you can substitute it. But like, if you bought it and you added it and you end up doing a lot of French cuisine, for example, it's worth it. Yeah, I do think it opens people's eyes to the possibility of just like switching something little and transforming your meal entirely.
Right, right. And I mean, the title is in itself, if you're going to buy a cookbook about Mediterranean cuisine, you're not going to just have salt and pepper, you know? So they should expect that from you, and they want that from you, which is why, you know, it's already, I think I saw it's really doing well on Amazon already. And it's just,
it's climbing, it's doing pretty well. So I'm really excited about it.
That's amazing. So I saw you are on a bit of a health journey as well. You lost 22 pounds in 12 months. What was the pipeline between, you know, cooking and content creation when you were going through that and turning it into simple, healthy recipes?
So I think that one of the biggest things that I wanted to do was I knew I had gained weight during the pandemic and I knew I wanted to lose the weight, but I actually don't believe in diets. And I think that I'm really proud of our culture, our like culture nowadays, like diet culture is really just getting subdued and people are just not believing in it anymore. Right. And I think we've seen enough to know that it doesn't stick around. Like your goals change and your body changes. And really what helps better is just like changing your lifestyle. So I wanted to make sure that like, I wanted to lose the weight. I know I did. But I didn't want to sacrifice on flavor or nutrition or just like the amount of food I eat. Like I love big plates. Like, and if you see my plates at dinner, it's just like, they're filled up with like so much vegetables, so much volume. And I feel like, you know, I wanted to make sure that like I could still eat the things that I wanted to eat while still getting a lot of nutritional value. So, and that's a lot of the recipes that I'll share on my website as well. I'll still do things with butter and I'll still do a couple things with like heavy cream here and there. But for the most part, it's well-balanced meals that are really very plant forward. So you're bulking up on veggies, you're bulking up on like good carbs, like sweet potatoes and oatmeal and things like that.
Yeah, I was going to ask if it was very vegetable heavy, it seems, which is a good thing because a lot of people, you know, get lost when they see like a carrot or a zucchini. They're like, okay, I just chop this up and do the same thing I've been doing for X amount of years.
Exactly. And one of the things I tried to do was thinking about how I can incorporate a vegetable in every one of my meals or snack, because they're so filling. And so when I was having eggs, for example, for breakfast, I'm like, what vegetable can I throw in there? And I would have like leftover butternut squash, for example, or if I even had some cabbage. I like anything like with eggs fried on top of it, it works. It's a good way to just add vegetables to your meal. And so soup is another good way to do that, of just throwing, or lasagna even. I throw so many vegetables in lasagna layers. Nobody knows. It's smothered between cheese layers and pasta, but it makes you feel full. So you end up eating a little bit less, and then you end up just getting more fiber that we need as we get older. So that's kind of been my philosophy, is just like loading up on so many vegetables as much as possible for every meal and every snack.
That's a good philosophy to have. I eat a fried egg every day, so I should probably try to incorporate that a little bit. The actual original way lasagna is made in Italy is with vegetables.
That's true. There's like celery, like a mirepoix, like celery, vegetable, carrots and onions are in there, and then zucchini too, and other vegetables too. And now here, I feel like the classic way is like beef, ricotta, cheese, lasagna. I'm like, where are the vegetables? And so
we Italian-Americanized it with cheese.
Exactly. So I'll throw in all kinds of things, whatever we've got left over in the fridge. And I'm also... I'm also a believer in like just using, you know, time-saving cuts wherever you can find them. Like if you're using, if that means using frozen vegetables, I use frozen vegetables all the time. Like I hate cutting butternut squash.
Oh,
like
me too.
Buy it frozen. You don't need to cut butternut squash. Like, you know, there's so many vegetables like that. And so, I hate cutting onions. And so sometimes like if I'm just like time scrapped, I'll just like buy chopped onions already. And I know that I can like poop, throw a meal together in 15 minutes by just buying prepared chopped things and throwing them in, you know, a pot together, for example.
Chopped onions is something that would save me a ton of time, because I feel like I'm nearly chopping onions like once a day. Yeah.
It's the worst.
I hate it. Yeah. It's kind of the worst.
It's crazy. And I do the same thing with like garlic too. I actually will buy a ton of peeled garlic already, and I'll put it in a food processor and I'll puree it all together by itself, and it turns into a paste, and I just use it all the time. As long as it's not, and I'll freeze it, as long as it's not something fresh like hummus that needs that fresh garlic taste, I would throw in that frozen garlic in everything. It just enhances all your food.
So smart. Yeah, that's such a hack. What's the recipe that you're most excited for in the book? Is there one that comes to mind?
Let's see. I think there's so many good ones. I would say I love this like roasted chicken because it has like pomegranate molasses on top of the potatoes. So it's just roasted chicken and potatoes. But it's got like 7 spice on the potato, on the chicken itself, and then pomegranate molasses in there as well. So it just gives it this like zingy, sweet and tart flavor. And I feel like it's beautiful, but also approachable. It's just a whole chicken that you just stick in the oven with potatoes and just the seasoning transforms it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So potatoes were not a thing that I used to love that much. And now I can appreciate how versatile they are and how much you can do with them. And they're actually really good vitamin wise.
Really are. Yeah. And I've just been like, I feel like we all got scared of like potatoes as carbs and like, what do they do? But like, they're actually a good source of even vitamin C, I think. And like, you know, good fiber and so much nutrients. And so, I love me a good potato. In the book, my favorite potato recipe is spicy potatoes. It's basically like baked, and then it's basically baked at a really high temperature, fried, and then like pan fried, and then tossed with like crushed red pepper and cilantro. It's like, it's just so good. It's just like,
I'm a cilantro person.
Eat that with everything. Yes. We call it batata hadra, which is batata, spicy potatoes in Arabic.
Oh, yeah. Yum. That's eat that so
with,
good.
With everything.
One of your book reviews said that a lot of these recipes have like fewer than 10 ingredients, which I thought was so interesting. What was the goal you had in mind or the vision you had in mind for your audience?
Well, I know that when I was learning how to cook myself, I would pick up books at the bookstore. I would buy some like, oh, I need to buy Ina Garten's cookbook, or I need to buy Julia De Laurentiis' cookbook. And so I'd buy some of these cookbooks, and I know that what I gravitated towards were recipes with photos and recipes that had less than 10 ingredients, or like it didn't have too much of an explanation with the ingredients. So when I went into this cookbook, I'm like, I want that for my audience as well. And I pushed back on the editor too, because like I would write things like half a teaspoon of cinnamon. They're like, you have to write half a teaspoon of ground cinnamon. I'm like, why do we have to say ground? No one's gonna care. Because I was trying to minimize the amount of words that were on the page.
They're going to cut like a cinnamon stick
I'm
and
like,
put
no
it.
No one is grinding their own cinnamon or using a whole stick. Like people know, but every single spice had to have the word ground in front of it. And so there's some of that you can't get away from. And I get now why some of the ingredients look as long as they look, because you have to say on avocado that it's peeled and seeded, etc. And so I get that now. And so I can't shorten the name of the ingredient always, because you have to like give them enough information. But I tried to make that list as short as possible, because I felt that like people were more inclined to make it if they saw that it was short. And then there's also a picture next to it of exactly what it looks like. So I pushed hard on that. I was like, I need a photo for every single recipe, because people aren't going to make the ones that don't have photos. You know?
No, so, I wouldn't.
No. And like my son flipping through that book yesterday, he was like, I want that one. I want that one. He wasn't looking at the ingredients. He was looking at the photos.
No, that's actually so true. I mean, maybe my mind's just like an 11-year-old boy's or something, but when I look at a cookbook and it doesn't have a photo, I literally skip right over it.
They're like, I don't. And I think a lot of people don't even look at the title first. They're looking at the photo, and it's like, what grabs your attention? You know? So I think that was really important to me. And then finding the right photographer as well that can really just like bring these recipes to life in a way that makes you so excited to have them, but in a way that also doesn't look too stylized or too professional. It just like looks like home. Looks like you're sitting down with your friend or your sister and just having this like, you know, roasted chicken together.
I know we're wrapping up on time, so I have my final questions for you. Do you have any other upcoming projects or anything that you'd like to share that's going on? I know we talked a lot about the cookbook. You have recipes. What else is going on?
So last year I started a company called Oath, and basically it's an oat-based company. And so I make overnight oats, and I have them in 4 different flavors right now. So super excited about that. It's really difficult to come up with a product and to launch something like this, but I'm so passionate about overnight oats. And if you Google overnight oats, my recipe is number one. And people have always said like, I want to make it the way you make it. And so this was my way to bring them my recipe to life in the convenience of their home. And so all they have to do is add milk to it, and you have overnight oats the next day. And I think for busy moms, it's just such a genius product. And so my goal for the next year is to create more flavors, create individual packets as well. Right now it's like a pouch of 6 servings. And so, and to get into more stores. Okay. So after this cookbook launch, that's going to be a huge priority of mine, is just to,
as it should be.
Yeah, exactly. And I want the world to know about overnight oats, and it's like my oath to people. And I love the name. I love the concept. And I feel like more people would love the product as well.
I think so too. Overnight oats had a moment, and they still are.
Yeah. And surprisingly, like if every time I share them, and even on my website, it has got like 25,000 5-star reviews or something. Like people just are, love the recipe so much. So it's really fun to think about like new flavor ideas too. I'm like, can we do a tahini, like chocolate chip, overnight oats? So yeah.
That sounds good. I'm going to have to try that. That
sounds good.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll have to try that. I know I was looking through that page a little bit. All right, my last question for you, and it's something that I ask every guest. If there is one cooking appliance or utensil that you think everyone should splurge on, what would it be and why? Splurge is the word.
Oh, splurge is the word. Okay, let's see. I would say a food processor, like a really good food processor, because my food processor, I think, is like $300. And I think that there's some recipes that like are just like making hummus in a good food processor is just perfection. And then there's so many things that like it can do the job for you, whether it's slicing, chopping, grating, blending. There's just like, I need it all the time for making salsas, making spreads. I even use it for making like desserts, like date balls. I make those all the time, like for energy bites.
Oh, yeah.
And having a good one is just, it's one of my go-to workhorses in the kitchen.
I'm still, I don't know if it's just laziness or I keep forgetting to purchase one, but I literally made basil last night and I was like, well, this would have been the time.
Totally. But I would say if people wanted a cheaper thing, I would say an immersion blender is like amazing. Like one of those like $20 and boom, like, you know, throw in like make some soup puree. Like it's a great tool and like much cheaper.
Another thing on my list.
Blender. Yeah. So good.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on and taking the time out. I'm glad we got to chat and meet, and I'm really, really excited for your cookbook, and congratulations on all the success coming your way. It's really exciting.
Thank you so much, Olivia. It's been so much fun talking to you and being on the show, and I appreciate the time.
Of course. So you can keep up with Yumna's latest recipes on Instagram at feelgoodfoodie, or pre-order the Feel Good Foodie Cookbook, 125 recipes enhanced with Mediterranean flavors, out today, now. Hey, fellow foodies, thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to leave me a review. While you're at it, make sure to follow me at livinforfoodpod on Instagram or TikTok, or email me at livinforfoodpod@gmail.com. Let me know what you're cooking up this week, which guests you would like to see on the podcast, or tell me your opinions on the latest viral food trend. And in case you're just joining me, there is an entirety of season 1 ready and waiting for you. Until next time.